Good morning. We'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session from the Mesa City Council for Thursday, September 26, 2013. We'd like to excuse Council Members Summers and Glover, who will not be here and will not be calling in. The first item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, provide direction on revisions to the zoning code ordinance. Mr. Sheffield.
Mayor.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm just hunky and dory.
That's good to hear. We have 15 items that we'd like to talk to you about. 14 of these items we've presented to you previously. One item is new, and we'll get to those in order. The 14 items that we've talked to you before have gone to the P&Z board. They have made recommendations on the one item that is new, has not gone to P&Z, and would be required to go back to P&Z first before it comes back to you for consideration, if that's the direction that you give me. To kind of get started here, what we've got is, again, we updated the zoning ordinance 2 years ago, and again, we're coming back to you with items that we find need some adjustment, need some fine-tuning, in order to make the ordinance work a little bit easier. First item, again, is the idea about small recycling facilities in the downtown business 2 district. We're proposing to increase the floor area from 1,000 to 5,000 square feet. We've got an existing facility that has been operating for some time. It's technically in violation of the ordinance. However, it appears to be a compatible use, and it appears to be consistent with the uses that are along that stretch, and so we feel an adjustment of the code is warranted in this particular case, and asking council if they agree. Last time I presented to the use, you did agree, and we've recommended approval. P&Z has also recommended approval. Community gardens in the downtown core. The current community garden that's down here is operating under interpretation. We'd like to make that an explicit permitted use, and would like to adjust the ordinance accordingly. Again, you gave us direction and said you agreed with that. P&Z has also agreed with that, and so we're presenting that to you for the ordinance change. RV storage lot and residential single dwelling districts, the RSPADs. Initially, we had thought that this would invoke a change to the code. You gave us direction to use it to do a special use permit. Instead, we presented that to P&Z. They thought that was a good idea. We're bringing it back to you again, saying that when we have these, in essence, an amenity for master plan communities, that may have deed restrictions that prohibit RVs from being stored on the individual lots. They have an RV storage lot as an amenity. This would allow them to, through the special use permit, open this up to people outside of that specific planned community in terms of how they market and who may store their RVs on that particular property. Rather than being an accessory or amenity to just those residents, this would allow folks from outside of that community to also.
Remind me, did we discuss any kind of approach to that? I mean, I could see somebody selling or starting out as an RV storage as part of an amenity, and then maybe they sell that off and the guy in there just operates it as a regular RV storage business. I don't remember if we talked about that potential and whether that was a big deal or not a big deal.
We didn't discuss that specifically. That is an option. In fact, that's one of the that's one of the reasons why we're bringing this to you, is that condition does exist in one of these. A homeowners association has sold their RV storage lot to someone who thought that they could operate that and market to people outside of that community. We've told them they're not. They'd like to change the ordinance so that they can. The specific reason why I believe the council directed us to do the special use permit in the residential district versus a change in code to a commercial district was because most of these are located in areas where they're not wouldn't necessarily facilitate future commercial uses. And so
they're usually tucked away back in a corner,
right,
as opposed to being right on the street and that.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so the thought was is that rather than have a commercial district located in some odd spot that didn't seem to work with the rest of the plan, the base zoning district would remain residential in this case, and we would just authorize, in essence, what could be an interim use until long term it may change to something different.
And I mean, if you look at it, do we really care whether there's RVs driving down streets that happen to come from within the subdivision as opposed to outside, it's still an RV driving down the street.
That's exactly the point.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Vice Mayor?
With regard, could you remind me on the special use permit process, what does that entail? Somebody comes in and how does that work?
They file the application, staff reviews that, makes a recommendation, and then presents that to the Board of Adjustment. There are certain criteria that are generally associated with that. Typically, we recommend approval if they meet the criteria.
Okay, so through the Board of Adjustment, and that's appealable through the legal system, right?
Through the court system, yes.
The court system, okay.
Any other questions?
Yes. Now, why does that go through the Board of Adjustment? Isn't a special use permit in this case, wouldn't that be more of an administrative matter? Or is that something we decide, or is that as a matter of ordinance that it has to go through the Board of Adjustment?
The City Council has given the Board of Adjustments authority over special use permits. It's a quasi-judicial matter, okay. Typically, and special use permits, by having that extra authority, we treat it as an administrative matter, but it gives it a public hearing process so that people can come and comment.
Okay. Could we, if we do this, I don't think this is going to come up every day.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that it stays an objective, because the Board of Adjustments is pretty well, by state law and by other things, that the criteria that they can look at are pretty well defined.
Yes.
And I would just, you know, I appreciate the public hearing as long as there's an objective standard that they're applying so that people similarly can position get the same consideration. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think the board understands that. I've been working with the Board of Adjustment since 1992. My experience with the board has been they generally stick to the criteria.
Okay.
The purpose of the public hearing basically is to get all information out on the table so the board has every piece of information possible.
Okay. There's postings. People know what's going on. It's not an over-the-counter kind of thing where all of a sudden someone wakes up and there's an RV park that they thought the HOA owned and now it's...
And
now
that
it's
was,
on by outside.
That was part of the criteria that we were going to use is that the special use permit would be available for existing facilities.
Right.
This could be something that pops up new and then.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to start out, we're not going to look too kindly on a planned development that comes in and let's say they carve out a portion and then go get ABC RV parks to come in and run the deal. The thing is the situation that you talked about where the HOA or the developer starts out and offers as an amenity and let's say they want to transition it, they want to do whatever. That's the kind of situation we're looking at here.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Anything on that? Okay. Modular buildings during remodeling, the code already explicitly allows this during construction in conjunction with a construction permit anticipated construction. We have an administrative use permit process. We can do that. It's not as clear about remodeling, especially for commercial properties or stores that might be doing interior remodeling that might not rise to the level of a construction permit. It might just raise to the level of like an electrical permit or plumbing permits. So we'd like to offer that option for folks so they can do some fairly extensive interior remodeling that might not raise to the level of a construction permit. Vacation rental homes. This is the one item that is new. This is the one item that would have to go back to the Planning and Zoning Board, depending upon the direction that the council gives me. This came up as a result of an interpretation that I was asked to make this last June. This is a new item, believe it or not, even though these have been existing for some time from a zoning standpoint. Where there's no legal definition in the zoning code for this, so just to kind of ballpark what the use is, this would be a single-family home in a typical single-family neighborhood. There would be no on-site manager or any kind of in-type of operation going on here, but this would be just a person who rents their house on a temporary basis, typically for less than 30 days, usually a weekend or for a week. And they don't stay there. Basically, they just hand the keys over to these folks, and those folks basically use that as their base for their vacation while they spend time here. The use is subject to the transit occupancy tax. I was going to mention that. And that forms the basis on part of what I used to make the interpretation. The zoning ordinance in section 11.5.2 says that any use classification that's not explicitly listed as one of the other classifications considered prohibited. So by default, if it's not listed, it's not allowed. And so in going through the list of what my job is as the zoning administrator and making the interpretation is to see if there is a classification that could be considered analogous to the activity that I'm being asked to interpret. In this particular case, as a vacation rental home, the idea was it's a temporary use. People are there. The distinguishing feature of that is the fact that the people who occupy the home are there for less than 30 days. And under the model tax code, a transient is defined as a person who stays there for less than 30 days. So in going through and looking at the use classifications that are in the zoning ordinance, the three uses that could be considered analogous to this are hotel, motel, and bed and breakfast. Hotels and motels, obviously, that's not what this is, so they're not, those would be considered prohibited. The closest thing came to bed and breakfast, but the minimum lot size for a bed and breakfast is 15,000 square feet, and where I was asked to make the interpretation, none of the lot sizes in that particular subdivision came anywhere close to reaching that minimum threshold for lot area. So by default, it wasn't necessarily an interpretation you want to make, but the interpretation that I was kind of backed into by default was to say that it was a prohibited use. I'm not real comfortable with that interpretation, partly because these activities have been coming around for a long time, but that tends to be the one that, again, by default, we're kind of forced into. So we want to bring this to the attention of the City Council. Obviously, this is a fairly significant issue. This is something that's been going on for some time, and we want to get direction as to, do we want to continue to keep this interpreted as being prohibited in the code, or should we make changes to the code and authorize these either as a use by right, as an over-the-counter use permit, or possibly through the Board of Adjustment as a special use permit?
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. This is an interesting issue, and I kind of come from the standpoint that if we're having vacation rental homes, Mesa is a nice place to come and visit. Mesa is a nice place to come and live. And I'd like to at least have a structure that doesn't discourage that. And I don't think it should go to the formality of a special use permit, but I think, you know, I would look either at the administrative use permit, if city simply wants to keep track of the places to ensure the transient occupancy tax is collected, that might be one way to go, but I certainly don't think we should prohibit them. So I think we should look at options 2A, 2B. 2B probably is one just for administrative purposes. It lets them know that, lets the owners know, you know, you're still subject to this, to the bed tax. So, thank you.
Councilman Luna.
What do we do with international home exchanges? Because that's a common practice now. We have people from Europe wanting to come to Arizona, for example, Arizona residents wanting to go to Europe. Have you looked at that as well? Because theoretically, there's no monetary exchange relative to that.
To be honest with you, no, I haven't looked at that. That's an interesting question. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. I don't have a good answer for you right now.
Vice Mayor, go ahead. And the question I have is that, you know, what are we worried about here? Are we worried about the use of the property? Because it seems to me whether someone's staying there 6 days or 6 months, the use of the property is the same. Unless you start putting four families and you literally take a single family house and start running it as a bed and breakfast where you have multiple tenants, which I don't think that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about an entire home, right?
Yes.
Okay. The use of the property would be a zoning issue. I agree with Councilmember Kavanaugh that really, you know, my feeling is I don't care if that's how they use the property, but I am concerned that they're not, to me, the price to use the property in that way would be to pay the transitory tax. It is a business, but it's not a business, and I don't know that we want to tell people no, 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 because first of all, they're going to do it. Secondly, I don't know that from a zoning standpoint, anyone in the neighborhood would even notice that's going on. And if nobody notices, why do we meddle?
My understanding is this practice has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And I've been working for the city for 27 years, and this is the first time I can actually recall being asked to make the interpretation.
Yeah, and especially in Mesa, you know, like during spring training, things like that, people rent their houses out for a week at a time. You got these house exchanges, which is basically the same thing, just the manner of payment is different. And those are a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time. So it's going on, and if nobody notices, why bother? But I am concerned. I think that if someone's going to use their house for commercial, in a commercial way, that way, even though it doesn't really negatively affect the neighborhood, they should get into the taxing scheme. That would be my feeling. Vice Mayor?
Just going to give you an anecdotal example. I have an extended family member. They live out of state. They come here as snowbirds. But for February, March, for spring training, they put it up. They have their transit, and the city contacted them. So this is why it's kind of different. You know, we're saying that it's not allowed, but the city contacted them. They got their license. They report every month, and they pay an increased property tax because they do not get the benefit of the discounted part. So the city gets the benefit of the increased property tax. So I don't know how we're not doing it, but they're complying completely, mm-hmm. and they're willing to do it. But that's the way they offset some of those costs. And they keep an immaculate house in a beautiful area and never had a complaint. So it seems like it works. So I hope we go back to P&Z, and I'm in agreement with what you're hearing here.
And the Vice Mayor brings up an interesting point, because if you are using it, and I don't know what the property tax rules are, but it definitely, if you're renting it out,
yeah.
I don't know how what percentage of the year or at what point it rises to the level where it does not get the residential valuation, which is what, 10%, and if they're not, it's probably jumps up to 16 or more percent on the assessed valuation. So there definitely is a property tax thing. I'm not sure I want to get into that as the city, since that's not our primary deal, but the use in zoning would be, I think, our primary concern, and the fact that they're going to use it, at least pay the transitory tax.
Okay, so just to kind of summarize a little bit, present a possible amendment to the code that would define the use and then authorize it as either a by right activity or an administrative use permit.
Yeah,
To B.
Okay.
I would think an administrative use permit, just because it sets up a regulatory process that recognizes that in order for us to know that you owe the transitory tax, we got to know what's going on. And so it's a simple application that you'd fill to say, yes, I'm using my house for this month. We're fine that you use it that way.
Right.
That's okay. We just want you to be in the system.
Okay.
Does that sound okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Again, this is an item that we brought to you earlier. This has to do with canal banks and alleys. The existing code authorizes the starting point for measurement of a rear yard setback from the center point of an alley. We'd like to extend that so that would include canal bank maintenance roads. Again, it's a technicality, but it seems to be a similar analogous issues where you have the separation that already takes place because of the roadway behind the house. And so we felt that we'd like to give that extra 10 feet or so in the rear yard as additional buildable area. This is especially prevalent in the case in terms of the West Mesa area where there are several alleys.
And did this go back to P&Z? About this.
You've already talked about it. This is ready for ordinance.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I didn't remember that there was a problem with this last time
no,
I talked
about
it. Okay. So you're just reviewing.
Yeah. The rest of this is completely reviewed. P&Z has looked at each of these issues and made recommendations
for
approval.
Okay, good. All righty.
This is more of a reminder from here at this point out.
Okay.
Again, this has to do with we're trying to activate the street. These are some of the things we've learned from our form-based code exercises. And discussions and studies. And part of doing that, we'd like to get the active portion of the house or of the buildings out toward the street and want to give benefit and kind of reward that for folks who do that. So we'd like to allow an encroachment of the balconies and patios for apartments into what would normally be a 30-foot setback, allow that up to 10 feet on the street side. Again, the council said that they thought that was a good idea. P&Z agrees. We'd like to do something similar in industrial districts. Again, we would take the buildings, the active parts of the buildings, buildings and patios, and allow them to encroach up to 15 feet in industrial districts. This would be an example. This is a patio that's out off of Stapley across the street from Mesa Grand is the example in the photograph. Again, the council said that they thought it was a good idea, and P&Z agrees. Under the parking regulations, we give discounts. If you're located within 1/8 of a mile of a transit stop, we'd like to increase that radius to 1/4 of a mile, again, to try to encourage minimal parking and encourage use of the light rail and bus rapid transit. Again, council thought that this was a good idea, and so does P&Z. Ocotillo plants. The part of the issue that we've had is under aerial utility lines, trying to grow trees into those areas, you end up with trees that grow too high and they get cut funny and it looks a little odd. And one of the thoughts we've been having is trying to offer substitutions that allow folks to plant a different type of plant that would still have a vertical presence on the property and enhance the landscaping without necessarily just being a small shrub. And so part of that thought would be to sit here and substitute the tree requirement for an ocotillo requirement. Ocotillos generally don't grow as high enough to get into the aerial utility lines, but they're vertical enough that they're taller than a shrub or a bush. The proposal would be to allow up to 10% of the minimum required trees to be ocotillos under the substitution scheme. And in the desert uplands area where there might be more prevalent, they would allow up to 30% of the minimum number.
And I think this is a creative solution, but it gets back to the other problem we have. It allows two ocotillo plants. What if we have overhead wires? Are we still going to require trees that we know are going to grow into the wires?
There's another provision that's in the landscape requirement that was part of the zoning code update called an alternative landscape plan. And under that, the zoning administrator, in this case me, is authorized to approve a substitute scheme. And so in that particular circumstance, if we have a circumstance where an aerial utility line affects something greater than 10% of the scheme, I'm already authorized to approve an alternative.
Okay, I'd like to see where on our landscape plans that there's an actual requirement that if you are on an arterial or any place where there is a utility easement, that the landscape architect must declare or must show whether there are wires above the space or not wires above the space. Because I think you don't drive out to each individual property, right? You're going from...
I look at the aerial photographs.
May or may not see, hopefully you'd be able to see, but an aerial photograph, sometimes you can't see whether there's wires above there.
Sure.
And I think one of the problems is we're sitting there looking at a map or an aerial or something, and we're requiring these trees to be as part of our normal landscape thing, and there's wires there, and we know there's going to be a problem there. And I'd like to see something that just indicates, hey, listen, tell us whether there are poles on your property or not, or because they're really not on their property, they're in an easement or whatever. And if there are, you go right into the alternative.
That's a fairly simple switch. We can just make that required as part of the submittal requirements. I'm already authorized to direct what those are.
Yeah.
So we'll just add that to our list.
Just add it. And if there are, then you can go into your alternative scheme, and we can go shrubbery or ocotillo or whatever. Mm-hmm. But stay out of those wires.
Okay.
With trees. Okay.
We'll do that. Similar to what we were doing with the patios in multiple residence districts or in patios in industrial districts, we'd like there's a corner radius that separates the building from the immediate intersection. We'd like to again try to activate that corner a little bit by getting buildings and patios into that area and allow that encroachment into what would otherwise be a setback. Again, the council thought that this was a good idea previously, and so did P&Z. There's some technical revisions to the code we'd like to make. One has to do with measuring separation or buffer requirements. This is not new. This is basically clarification of existing practice. Where this came up the most is recently with the medical marijuana ordinance. I've personally reviewed about somewhere between 80 and 90 applications for medical marijuana dispensaries and cultivation facilities.
Wait, the plan or the product?
Plants.
Oh, okay. I want to make that clear.
Yes.
I had a little job envy here if you were doing the entire review, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's not quite that fun.
Plan or plants? I don't know what I heard. But.
In order to make this consistent, this is the interpretation we used, where we would use the campus edge for a church or a school or a daycare, and we would measure to the wall of the proposed facility. If you read the ordinance, unfortunately, it says that you measure it in a straight line, but it doesn't necessarily clarify stopping and starting points. And so we would like to make that explicit in the ordinance and basically clarify the existing practice. Again, when we presented this to council previously, you said this sounded like a good idea. P&Z agrees, and they've also recommended approval. The other technical revisions, right now there are two sections of the code that deal with detached accessory buildings, one in the agricultural district, one in the residential districts. We'd like to consolidate those to make it a little bit easier for folks to find and do that into one chapter or one section of the code. The council has added form-based codes to the zoning ordinance. We'd like to formally do that. There's a specific section that lists each of the base districts that are in the zoning district. We'd like to add it to that list. There is a typo in table 1154B. It says RSL 2.0. We'd like to change that to RSL 2.5. This is more than a Scrivener's error. This is some 2.0 would significantly increase the potential density for these types of things. It's clear if you read the rest of the language in that particular section of the code that it's supposed to be 2.5. We'd like to clarify it in the table that it's supposed to be 2.5.
Do we need to form a motion to correct typos? We can go by without it. Thank you, Ms. Spinner. Oh, okay.
Okay, and those are the items we'd like to present you. Again, those 14 items that are ready for introduction of ordinance. The vacation rental home issue has to go back to P&Z.
Great.
First.
Any other questions for Gordon? Hey, thank you. This has been a long, long process. And, I think the reason being is that I appreciate the fact that these things seem little until all of a sudden you're the one that's owns the property and are looking for a use. And I think one of the biggest frustrations I hear from citizens is the understanding that I just don't understand why they just can't let me do it. And I said, well, if the law didn't say this, we would. But the law, if the city council and the staff starts just sort of ignoring the law and only enforcing those things we want to, I will just be like the federal government. And we don't want to go there. So I appreciate the fact that you take the time to really look at these nuances and recognize that sometimes our ordinances don't accurately reflect what we really want to accomplish. And so, like you said, these things that seem like minor little changes actually can have significant impacts on how people use their property. And I appreciate you taking the time to very, very, in a very detailed manner, go through and try and correct all those. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good work. Okay, next item is information pertaining to current job order contracting projects. Are there any questions for anyone on those? I think you have the schedules. Okay. Here reports on meetings and conferences attended. Councilman Kavanaugh, you got something to report from last night, I think.
Oh, yes. You and me, Councilmember Richens, were at the Mesa Arts Center last night for the announcement of funding grants for the Arts Space Program. This is... As the community might recall, this is an initiative from ArtSpace, who reached out to Mesa last year. They're the nation's leader in doing live-work affordable housing for artists. And J.P. Morgan Chase announced a $150,000 grant to the community to help fund the market study, pre-development work. We also obtained funding from LISC, which I think was $25,000. And so that's a significant source of income to move this project along. And so the arts space personnel will be interviewing artists, community leaders, really throughout Mesa and throughout the Valley to help them assess the type of affordable housing that could succeed here in the Valley. But it's quite a coup for Mesa and for Arizona. This company has been doing projects like this across the country for about 20 plus years, and I've seen many of the projects that create a great sense of place in the community. And I know the artist community is very excited about this, and Mesa Arts Center staff has done a great job in working with them.
Thank you. Anyone else? Ms. Kent.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Just a couple items. Coffee with Councilmember Kavanaugh is tomorrow, Friday, from 7:30 to 8:30 in the new Fiesta District substation. We will be providing tours, and that's located at 1010 West Grove. And also the next Building Strong Neighborhoods meeting will also be in District 3 on October 1st from 6:30 to 7:30 in Porter Elementary School Cafeteria, which is located at 1350 South Lindsay. And the next study session will be next Thursday at 7:30 in the morning. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Anything else? Have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, a second Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.